Right. So I want to talk about a problem that I personally have been working on for at least 15 years and still have not solved it. So I know that some people here also have been thinking about this for some time. So my goal, the problem can very easily be stated, and I apologize if the level of sophistication of this is not as high as the other talk. So if X is a smooth, and you might as well assume projective, but it doesn't have to be, but let's say smooth projective variety over C, and G is a finite group acting on X. The question is, understand the ring. So this is a crucial part, Hochschild cohomology of the stack or orbifold, if you wish, X mod G. So that's the problem. The problem is fundamentally in understanding the ring structure here, not just the not just the vector space structure. And before I try to tell you what we hope to get, I would like to start by explaining what kind of answer you hope to get by telling you what we know for a non-orbifold, namely when X is just X, not X mod G. Of course, you could ask the same question, for example, for a Dellin-Mumford stack, and I don't think the answer will be fundamentally different. You just need to use slightly different language. It's easier to express the question and the answer in this way. So for just X, here's the two things that you need to do. First of all, you need to describe the vector space, and you have the so-called Hochschild-Constant-Rosenberg isomorphism, which says that Hochschild cohomology of X is isomorphic as a graded vector space to direct sum P plus Q equals to star HP of X wedge Q of TX. This is a tangent bundle. As I said, we're over C or over a field of characteristic zero. Already, it's an interesting question. This isomorphism is not known and most likely not true in characteristic P. This is if I'm just going to state an open question, it would be interesting to find such an isomorphism in positive characteristic. It's known for large positive characteristic, but it's not known when the characteristic of the field is less than the dimension of X. All right, so we have this Hochschild-Constant-Rosenberg isomorphism, which I'm not going to tell you right now how it is defined. I will give you a conceptual interpretation of it later on, but the main point of it is a graded vector space isomorphism, but it is not, in general, a ring isomorphism. And when I say a ring isomorphism, we notice that the left-hand side canonically has a product because it's a Hochschild cohomology of anything. It has a commutative product structure. The right-hand side also has a graded commutative product structure obtained just by wedging polyvector fields and cup product in cohomology. However, this map, this specific map that I wrote, is not a ring isomorphism. And then the second part, which comes from this remarkable paper of Koncevich, deformation quantization of Poisson manifolds. So Koncevich, and then Koncevich stated this as a claim with no proof, where for reasons that I will try to explain the basic reasoning behind this statement, and then with completely different techniques, Damien Kalak and Michel Vandenberg proved this statement, namely that if you take, let's call this this right hand side here HT star of X for polyvector field cohomology, the statement is that there is a an operator here, a polydifferential operator, which I will call contraction with square root of Todd x to the minus 1, such that the composition of these two maps, this one, is a ring isomorphism. So the statement, this is the statement of the full description of the Hochschild cohomology ring. The Hochschild cohomology ring turns out to be isomorphic to this polyvector field cohomology ring, just not via the obvious map, the first map that you write, but rather via a much more complicated map, which involves this term, which whenever you see this, it should strike you as coming from some kind of quantization procedure. All right. So this is the statement that we have for ordinary spaces. And we'd like to generalize this to orbifolds. And the question is, why would you care about solving this problem for all orbifolds? So why interesting for orbifolds? And my background is I would like to, I have been very interested in this open question that's been around for a long time. There's a conjecture due to Yongbin Ruan, which as far as I know has been open for a good solid 15 years, which says the following: if X is a compact hyperkähler manifold, and G acts on X, G is finite and acts on X by holomorphic symplectic automorphisms, and if Y is a Krepent resolution, is a holomorphic symplectic resolution of the singularities of X mod G, then the ordinary cohomology ring of Y should be isomorphic to the orbifold cohomology ring of X with respect to the group action of G. So this conjecture came about from this is purely on a on the symplectic side, on the A model side. So you might remember that, I don't know if you, many people in this audience care about this, but when X is any kind of space and G acts on it, there's first of all a vector space defined which is supposed to capture the cohomology of this particular quotient, but it's not just a cohomology of the quotient, it has more pieces to it. And what Chen and Ruan did was they managed to put a product structure on this vector space using Gromov-Witten theory. Essentially, the idea is you study the full Gromov-Witten theory of the orbifold X mod G that gives rise to a quantum cohomology ring, and then you set in the quantum cohomology ring the variable H bar equals to zero or whatever quantization parameter, and that gives you an associative product on just the ordinary part of the cohomology, but which is a bigger vector space than just a cohomology of X mod G.
So does that care only about the constant curves?
Sorry?
Does putting h bar equals 0 mean it only depends on constant curves?
But only constant.
Yeah, but it's constant orbifold curves.
Constant orbifold curves, yes. So yeah, so and in fact, you only care about M03. That's it. You only care about.
Okay, so it's not really gone off, wouldn't it? It's much more to do with the manifold and fixed loci and things like that.
Manifold and the fixed loci and the normal bundles to the fixed loci. Yes.
And you want this to be a ring isomorphism?
Yes, exactly. So this is a ring, and in general, if X is not hyperkähler and the group acts, it's not expected to be. So there is. There is some moral reason why these two should be somewhat related, but certainly the vector spaces are the same that you can prove. However, there is no hope that such a statement would hold for an arbitrary X. For example, if X was just Calabi-Yau and G acted by maybe Calabi-Yau automorphisms, several Krepent resolutions of the singularities of X mod G might have different ring structures, even though the vector space is the same. So there is no hope that one particular ring would match all of them. But in the compact hyperkähler case, this is expected to be true. Yes?
Is there also this explanation that for, in general, the grading is not by integers on this chain 1 homology?
That's right, but in the hyperkähler case, yes, indeed, the grading here in general is not integral, but this is integral in the hyperkähler case. So there's, I think, even in the Calabi-Yau case, I think in the SL, when the group acts by SL transformations at each point, then you do get integral grading. But okay, so. This is a conjecture, and as far how far this conjecture has been verified, the only place where it has really been verified was this is due to Fonteki and Goetsche. Let's say z, if x is s to the power n, where S is a K3 surface, certainly this is a hyperkähler manifold, and G is a symmetric group on N letters acting by permutations. Then X mod G, the ordinary quotient, is just a symmetric product. I don't know how to write the symmetric product of X with symmetric product of X with itself of X n times. And the important, there is a very important Krepent resolution, which is X n, the Hilbert scheme of n points. on X, which by Mukai and as
sorry.
This is why this is a Krepent resolution and hyperkähler resolution of X mod G. And the result of Fonteki and Goetsche, of course, we know that this is hyperkähler by Mukai, which inspired PTVV. This is the basic inspiration for PTVV. And the what Fonteki and Goetsche showed, they explicitly calculated this right-hand side in this case, just by hand computed every little piece of it. The left-hand side had been calculated through a lot of effort. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly who the people were who calculated this. This was the effort of many people, the calculation of the Hilbert scheme.
It's mostly
Lenin Zorger. Lenin Zorger, okay. So the left-hand side computed by Lenin Zorger and the right-hand side by Fantecchi and Goetze. And they just compared the left-hand side and right-hand side, and they noticed that the two are isomorphic by a complex isomorphism. The interesting thing is actually that both the left-hand side and the right-hand side can be calculated with integer coefficients, and the rings are not isomorphic over Z. They're only isomorphic after you... They're isomorphic after a degree 2 extension. You need to introduce a square root of minus 1. Okay. So here's a potential explanation. So, but this result of Fantecchi and Goetze just verifies the conjecture in this case, but provides no kind of conceptual explanation other than saying I've computed the two sides and I know what they are and they match. So here's a potential explanation. So you notice, so we know by way of Bridgeland King Reed we know that the derived category of y in this particular case, I want to emphasize, is equivalent to derived category of the orbifold X mod G. This requires, so this is, this requires, so we expect this to be true in the case of the general conjecture of Ruan. Unfortunately, the Bridgeland King Reed statement does not quite apply in that generality. So we do not know this for yet for the case of a general hyperkähler resolution of a quotient X mod G, but we certainly expect this to be true. All right. Now we know also that Hochschild cohomology as a, can be defined as a ring from the derived category fundamentally, of course, with some enhancement. But that implies that the Hochschild cohomology ring of Y is isomorphic to the Hochschild cohomology ring of X mod G, which of course has this right-hand side has the great advantage that it's completely intrinsically defined. It does not, the definition of orbifold cohomology is very much ad hoc at, in the beginning at least. It does not, it's not obvious why it has a product. You have to do efforts to show that the product is associative. Well, this is completely canonically defined, and the derived equivalence gives us this isomorphism as rings completely intrinsically. Now, for the left-hand side, by Koncevich's claim and Kallak-Vandenberg, we know this is isomorphic to direct sum of HP of X wedge Q T Y, sorry, HP of Y wedge Q T Y for P and Q, and then as again as rings, and then by the fact that Y is hyperkähler, of course we know that wedge Q T Y is isomorphic to omega y, omega q y, and this is isomorphic to the singular cohomology of y with complex coefficients. So if all goes well, the left hand side in that equality can be completely identified with the Hochschild, with the Hochschild cohomology of X mod G. So now the question is, can we, if we could describe the ring structure here and the formulas that we are using to describe this would be the same as the ones in the case of an orbifold, we would be in business. So this is the question is it, in the case of an orbifold, the same as the orbifold cohomology of X and G? Of course, we know it a posteriori from the Fontecchi-Goethe calculation that these two should be the same. But if we could have a conceptual explanation why these two match, would be very nice. So that's why I care about the ring, understanding the ring structure here. I have to say that there's more to it. In fact, in this calculation here, we expect there to enter the Hochschild cohomology of the fixed loci, and the fixed loci are themselves hyperkähler in this case. So by the same argument as we had here, we inside here would enter exactly the singular cohomology of the fixed loci, which is what enters in here as rings. All right. So now, since we are interested in this problem, there are two questions. Or maybe let's say three. So the first question is, what is the analog of the HKR isomorphism? The second question is, what is the analog of the obvious product on HT star? And the third thing is, what is the Todd class correction? Okay. So the analog of HKR is well known. So the answer to one, this was known for a long time, but surprisingly did not appear in print until fairly recently. There's one published version of this due to Nora Ganter, and then it also appears in a paper of Dima Arinkin, myself, and Martin Havlicek. But I'm pretty sure that this was known for a long, long time. It says that there is an analog of the HKR isomorphism, which you could write like this. So for homology, this was known for a long time, but for cohomology is what I'm talking about, that the Hochschild cohomology of an orbifold X mod G is isomorphic too, and there's a big G invariance here. Direct sum over G in G, direct sum over P plus Q equals to star, H P minus CG on XG, wedge Q TXG tensor omega G. All right, so I have to explain what these terms are, because they will play a role later on. Here, XG is a fixed locus of G. TXG is its tangent bundle. CG is a codimension of XG in X. And omega G is a relative dualizing sheaf of the embedding XG into X. OK? So you might notice that this looks a lot like that HKR isomorphism, except that instead of having just one term corresponding, if you just took here the term corresponding to the unit element in the group, the fixed locus would be X, and then you'd get exterior powers of the tangent bundle, and there's no correction, there's no CG and omega G, and then G invariance. This would be the obvious piece of the Hochschild cohomology, but there's of course more terms coming from the non-trivial elements in G, the other terms are called in the physics literature the twisted sectors. All right, so the question is, so I'm not going to try to address this. So this is the first question. And there is a very specific isomorphism here, which I'm going to try to explain in a minute where it comes from. And so it's not just that there exists an isomorphism. There is a specific isomorphism, which is constructed through considerations which are very similar to this one. So it does play exactly the role of the HKR isomorphism for a space. Now, I'm not going to try to touch yet on the second question, because it's not obvious, I have to say. At the moment, I think, in fact, this is number two is the biggest stumbling block into at least formulating a Kontsevich-type claim. I have some very good guesses as to what a natural product would be here, but I cannot yet, maybe. They're not. Somebody else said that they're not in the stage where I can actually put them in a talk. But there are some good guesses as to what the product would be on the right-hand side.
But does this involve excess bundles like general?
They will involve the fundamentally maybe the Chern class of this omega g. Yeah, so it's maybe, yes, omega g will be the excess, will be the top exterior power of the excess bundle. All right, but let's try for now to take a guess at what is the Todd class correction. So it's reasonable to guess that it's again the square root of the Todd class of the orbifold, but what is the Todd class of the orbifold? So what is Todd of X mod G? And in order to understand this, the first thought that goes to your mind is, well, we know somewhere else where the Todd class comes in, namely in the Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch formula. And Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch is known for orbifolds. So this is just a guess. And I will try to justify later this guess. But for now, let's take a guess. It should be the same term that appears in Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch. So that's reasonable to make that guess. But you look, and as I said, Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch is known for orbifolds. So why not take a look at that? So here's a statement of Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch, which I've taken from a paper by Edidin. And it appears to be based on earlier work of Edidin and Graham. And it says that the Euler character, so if V is a G equivariant vector bundle on X, i.e. a vector bundle on X mod G, then the Euler characteristic of V is given by summation over H and G integral over XH mod G So this formula has, in some sense, the same flavor as that decomposition that you see there for Hochschild cohomology. Namely, it has some contributions which come from the twisted sectors, from all the elements of G, not just from the trivial elements of if trivial element of G. There is some integration over this fixed locus XH. The fixed loci come in. And then there is this Chern-Clausius. There's one more parenthesis missing. It looks roughly like the usual Riemann-Roch theorem. Namely, there's a Chern character part and a Todd class part. So it would be very tempting, by staring at this at first, it would be tempting to guess that Todd of X mod G is Todd of XH mod G along XH. So what I want, it is tempting to think, okay, maybe this is a Chern character part with some kind of funny corrections here. There is, if you just stare at the formula from a distance, and this is a Todd class correction. Seems reasonable to guess. And what I want to say is that this is just not how it should work. So the point is that this will turn out to be wrong, both for moral reasons and for technical reasons. But before I do that, let me explain a little bit the pieces that go in there. So V restricted to XG is obvious what it is. It's a vector bundle on the fixed locus XG. It still carries a complete action of G on it. But the important thing to notice is that because H acts trivially on X, oops, this is not XG, this is XH. I apologize. Because H acts trivially on XH, this vector bundle V still carries an action of H on the fibers. So the subgroup of the cyclic finite subgroup generated by H inside G acts on the fibers of V. And therefore, there will be a decomposition of the fibers of V into eigenspaces for that representation. This lambda minus 1 of NH is a typical operation from K-theory. So NH is a normal bundle of XH inside X. Lambda minus 1 is an object in K-theory, so it's a formal virtual sum minus 1 to the I wedge I NH star. So NH star is a conormal bundle. All right? This is not so surprising. The interesting part is TH. TH is an operation which was introduced by Atiyah and Siegel. And what it is, maybe let me call it TH of W. It is summation zeta up to the I WI where vector bundle W on XH on, and the important thing is that H acts trivially. So if you have a space on which you have a cyclic subgroup, an abelian group in particular, which acts trivially on that space, that if you have a vector bundle on that space, the vector bundle decomposes into pieces on which the element acts by the corresponding character. And what I'm doing is I'm multiplying that particular vector bundle into by the corresponding character of the group action. So W equals to direct sum of WI is the decomposition of W according to characters to eigenvalues of the action of H. All right. So this is a highly non-trivial operation which was introduced by Atiyah and Siegel. And it appears there too. All right. So what I want to do is I would really like to understand this formula of Edidin in a different way so as to make it match with my picture of how the Hirzebruch-Riemann rock should really function. So the moral picture of Hirzebruch-Riemann rock should be as follows. And it should be for any kind of space. So let's call the space any space, I don't know, Z. So what you should have is, first of all, you should have the K theory of Z. And from the K-theory of Z, you should have first a churn character type thing, which does not map into, as you are used to, into the cohomology, but rather into the Hochschild homology, in fact, in HH0 of Z. So this should be somehow a kind of tautological construction, should exist in any kind of reasonable setting. So now, from the Hochschild homology, you expect to have a map analogous to the HKR map that we had before into the, let's say, direct sum of HP of X omega P, or something else, something else which depends on Z a little bit. In the orbifold case, this will have to be changed. But what we usually call the churn character should be the composition of these two maps. So in the case of an ordinary space, this is well known. This is has been around for maybe 10 years at least, 15, no more. At least, I think maybe the first introduction was this was in the work of Markarian. But I'm sure this came from Kontsevich from before. Now, also in the Todd class of Z should be naturally an element in HH0 of Z. And the thing that you want to integrate would be, so in good cases, HH0 of Z would have a cup product. And Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch should say that the Euler characteristic of V should be the integral of HKR of churn of V, churn HHV, cup Todd Z. So somehow, the Todd class should not, you should not think of it as just a class in here. You should think of it as coming from a natural class in Hochschild homology. That's where the Todd class really should be. And somehow, whatever formula you get in the end should really come from the HKR applied to something that's happened in HH0. And of course, if in the case of an ordinary space, this really matches, because HKR is multiplicative. What we usually call the Todd class is just the image of HK of the classical Todd class into here, and HKR composed with this is just the usual Chern character. HKR applied to this is the Todd class, and HKR is multiplicative, and so we get the usual formula of the this. But if you look at this formula, it doesn't really look the way we want it, because it's got all these kind of funny extra terms, the th and the lambda minus one here, which we don't know where how to put it into this form. So what I want to do is I would like to reassemble this term here in a very different way. So first of all, I would like to argue, so note, because TXH is H invariant, maybe not invariant, H acts on this one trivially. So if I look at the tangent bundle of XH, this decomposition here decomposes into only one piece. There is only the trivial character. And the term by which I'm going to multiply it is 1. So from this, it follows that TH applied to TXH is just TXH. So this operation of Atiyah and Siegel doesn't do anything on TXH itself. So in particular, if I think about the Todd class as just some formal combination in K-theory of certain vector bundles, then it should also act trivially on Todd of TXH, Todd of XH, which is computed from the tangent bundle. So here I'm calling Todd not I don't think about Todd as a class in the cohomology of XH, but I think about it as some kind of formal combination of that is obtained in K theory from the tangent bundle. You break up the Todd bundle into line bundles using the splitting principle, and you take a certain linear combination in K theory. But because everything that you're going to do is going to have a trivial H action, whatever this TH operation is in K-theory, it should not do anything on any formal combination of Todd classes. The next observation is that, so that means that I can put this Todd inside here. And the other observation is that TH, so the second observation is that because of the short exact sequence, which says that I can put TXH into TX restricted to XH, and with the normal bundle NH, then from this, it's a standard calculation with Todd classes to see that, in fact, Todd of TX restricted to XH is Todd of TXH divided by lambda minus 1 of N star H. This is an equality in K theory of XH. So in fact, if you look at, we had these two different terms, this one and this one, but they together combine to give a much simpler term, namely the Todd class just of the tangent bundle of the big space restricted to XH. So using these two observations, we can rewrite the editing formula in a much more elegant way, which makes better sense. Namely, so the editing formula looks now like this, chi of v equals to summation h in g integral over x h mod g, chern of th of v restricted to xg times chern of th of tx, of tod of t of tx of, if you want, tod of x restricted to xg, and that's it. H. And now this is looks much better, looks a lot like that thing. So we have, first of all, something that appears to look like it lives in K-theory. And then we have something, so the vector bundle restricted to XH, sorry. And the tod class of all of X restricted to XH. And then we have some kind of isomorphism which takes us into some other vector space, which is this piece, which is the same one for the Chern character and for the tod. So now maybe let me tell you how this all fits into a nice diagram.
So you converted this quotient into V restricted to SH.
So this together with this give me a tod of the full tangent bundle of x. So you should think about the tangent bundle of x is, if I look at the tangent bundle of x restricted to the fixed locus xh, it breaks up into two pieces. This is a part on which h acts invariantly. And that's why it came out of the whole formula, because this had no action of t. T did not act on it. But it really, if I had put it inside, it would have given this combined with this, give me this guy. Does this answer your question?
So can you pull out this denominator?
Pull it out completely here?
No, I mean, that's what you are doing?
Or? No, yes, but I need to keep the th, because this normal bundle will have a non-trivial action of the of h. So th will act on it non-trivially. So if I pull it out, in fact, what I'm doing is I'm not pulling it out, I'm pulling this one in here and combining this with this to give a tod of the full tangent bundle. So I want to show you a diagram which actually makes everything make much more sense. And those formulas are perhaps more misleading than anything else. I just wanted to show you what is in the literature and why I think the Riemann-Roch should be written in a different way for orbifolds. So the diagram is the following. We have the following isomorphism. This is where Atiyah and Siegel, the way they wrote it, Atiyah and Siegel were concerned with the K theory of an orbifold X mod G. And they wrote it like this, direct sum over G in G, K0 of XG, G invariant. Maybe the correct statement actually is G co-invariant, to be honest. And their map here is a vector bundle V goes to the direct sum of V restricted to XG, but then you apply the T, maybe let me to write it like Edidin and Graham, let me call it H, goes to TH of V restricted to XH. And then take the H co-invariant, the G co-invariant. So what Atiyah and Siegel tell us is that if we take a vector bundle on X mod G, a G equivariant vector bundle, we can recover it, we can map it into something that has no equivariant part, but the way to do it is you need to apply this TH operator in the middle. And by the way, this statement only holds after you complexify everything. There is no analogous statement over Z. So this is very similar in some sense to what we see in Fontecchi and Goetze, that this cannot hold without certain extension of Q, or I mean, you don't need the full C. It's enough to go in some finite order extension of Q. All right, so now what we have is, from here, you expect to have a Chern character. And in fact, this is constructed through completely tautological means. And from here to here, you also have direct sum HH0 of XH. Here, you don't need to complexify already. Hochschild homology is a module over C. And then from here, you have an HKR isomorphism. And from here, you have another HKR isomorphism to direct sum H in G HPP of XH. And the statement is that this is what we should call. So this is the HKR result that I showed you due to myself and Dima Rinkin and Marcy Havlicek. This is the usual Hochschild constant Rosenberg isomorphism that I presented at the very beginning of the talk for the space XH. The statement is that this diagram should commute. Okay? And when you look at what it does, it tells you that the kind of canonical Chern character that you get for an orbifold is the one that involves the Atiyah-Siegel map and then the usual Chern characters. So this expression here, Chern of TH of this, is exactly what you get from V when you go down the right-hand side of the diagram. And this is exactly what you should call the Chern character of V in the extended sense, when you think about V as an object on X mod G as an orbifold. Now, in the same way, you have here the tangent bundle of the orbifold X mod G, which is exactly Tx everywhere. And that right-hand side should be exactly Todd, if you want Chern of Todd of Tx, where Chern is kind of an extra added bonus, if you want, maybe not Chern, better, let's call it HKR. So when you think about Tx here, you could do the Todd operation in here and then pass it through this map, or you could think about taking its image in here, or doing the Todd operation here and then sending it through this side, you get exactly the right-hand side. So now this really looks like your familiar Riemann-Roch, as you expected. So, all right. So this gives us a good guess as to what the Todd class is. In the maybe remaining 5 minutes, I would like to just give a conceptual explanation why we really expected this, why this is really the good guess. So let's try a geometric picture. And I apologize if I'm going to now change gears and speak about things that are maybe not as well known. So everything in this story has to do with the free loop space of the spaces we are dealing with. So if I take Lx to be the derived fiber product of x with itself over x cross x, this is what we call the free loop space of x. And Hochschild homology is just functions on LX. While Hochschild cohomology are relative distributions on over on the map LX to X. So this LX naturally comes with a map to X. If it's free loop space, the loops have a base point. You map the base point to the point in X. This is a vibration in homotopy groups. And there's this completely canonical interpretation of Hochschild homology and Hochschild cohomology of X. Hochschild homology are functions on the loop group, while Hochschild cohomology are distributions on the fibers here. And the product in Hochschild cohomology is just convolutions of distributions. So when I say distributions, I mean duals of functions. And the fact that the fibers here are groups means that not only do I have an operation on functions, a commutative operation on function, but rather I also have a non-commutative, potentially non-commutative operation of convolution of distributions along each one of those groups. And the Todd class has a well-known interpretation as the so it's a function on the loop group. It's an element in HH lower star of X. So it's a function on the loop group. And it is the function which measures, which determines the invariant volume form on the groups, on the fibers of LX over X. So there is, on the fibers of LX over X, those are groups. Therefore, I can talk about an invariant volume form. And I can compare it with a constant volume form. And the difference between them is just a function. And it's this special function, which is a Todd class. All right. So this is a story of what happens on a space. What's the picture that should be happening on for an orbifold? And the picture is, in the case of an orbifold, almost nothing changes except for the fact that the Lie groups here. Yes?
You are talking about invariant volume on the fibers. How you normalize
it? What you do is you start with a vector, any vector that you want, in the Lie algebra. You can either translate that by the constant translations in the Lie algebra, and then you get a completely constant vector. Sorry, you take a volume form on the Lie algebra, at the origin in the Lie algebra, and then you move it by translations everywhere. Or you move it by translations on the group, and that gives you an invariant volume form on the Lie group. Now you can compare the exponential of the first volume form with the second volume form. And because those are volume forms, they must differ by a number, a scalar at each point. And that this Todd class is exactly this function, which tells you the difference between the constant volume form and the invariant volume form. There is no normalization. It's one. This function must be one at the origin, because at the origin the exponential function does nothing. But at the other, there is no choice involved at all. It's on every Lie group or on every Lie algebra, it's up to you, because the exponential map is an isomorphism. There is this canonical function or power series defined around the origin.
So if the group is abelian, that would be one?
That would be one, yes. It would be everywhere one, but if it's not abelian, it's some function which can be defined in terms of the add action of the All right. So let me just draw the geometric picture in the case of an orbifold. So this picture was OK for a space, but for an orbifold, the picture just changes a little bit. So I'm going to draw a picture of x and also a picture of lx. So this is x. This is lx. Now, in the classical picture, this was just a thickening of x. So it just had a thickened nilpotent structure over x. What happens in the case of an orbifold is that there are more components. So this would be LXG, 1 LXG2. So there are more components, which are themselves thickenings of the fixed loci. So inside here, I had XG1, XG2, and so on. And your first thought would be that this is completely incompatible with the idea that the fibers should be groups. Because you think, well, here the fiber is just one group, one connectedly group. And the fiber here, it appears to have one piece, which is the identity component, which is fairly big. It's like the tangent bundle of x. But here, it appears to have a much smaller piece, which only captures the tangent bundle of xg. But this is the completely wrong picture. The correct picture is that when you take the fiber, you should take the derived fiber. So the loop group of an orbifold, x mod g, if I look at a point x in x, this is a disjoint union of tx restricted to x minus 1 for g in stabilizer of x. So, no, that's exactly the point. That's what I want to say. That the fiber, it is, so the loop group has indeed, the thickening is only txg. But when you take the derived fiber of this point, you're going to get, because you're taking the fiber product of this point with xg, you're going to get also a normal component from the excess bundle. So you're going to get exactly a txg that was coming from here, plus a normal bundle from here. And together, they assemble in a canonical way to have the full tx. And this makes perfect sense, because you expect that the components, if you have a disconnected Lie group, you expect it to have several components. But all the components should look the same. They cannot have different dimensions if you have a Lie group. So that's why this is exactly the point of what I wanted to say. The volume form on each component should look essentially the same, and it's the volume form that comes from Tx, not from Txg. So the invariant volume form, which is the Todd class, should arise from Tx on all components, not from Txg. So I will stop at this point. I'm happy to discuss privately about what I think is the map, the obvious multiplication. But at this point, I want to stop.
Thank you. Questions? Everybody needs coffee, so maybe we can ask questions downstairs. Coffee, yeah. And we'll resume in 20 minutes.